Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Enrico Belmonte.
And this is Carl Carlson.
Hey, Carl. Thanks for the opportunity for having you here today. This is our first episode of SOR. Generally, I was used to record this podcast with Fred, but today I have this opportunity with you. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah, I appreciate that as well, Enrico. We've had some good conversations on reliability discussions, and so it might be fun to pick up a topic here. What are you thinking about?
Yeah, I think one important topic that might help also our audience is related to reliability culture. You know, for example, new engineers or reliability engineers, they come in a new company and want to promote and establish reliability culture in this new company. So this might help them. You know, what do you think about that?
That's great. I'd love to do that. I'll just share a little bit here. As I managed a reliability group for many years, and that had its own culture. And I worked at General Motors, which had its own culture. And then the last 20 years after retiring from there, I worked with maybe 120 companies on reliability, and they all have different cultures. And it's just fascinating. I've seen some absolutely astoundingly good cultures, and I've seen some really bad ones. So it'd be fun to kind of share experiences and keep our focus on what do you do when you run into a negative culture.
Yeah, and I really appreciate your immense experience on that. So you have also some experience in with reliability culture. So I worked at Bosch, and then I'm now working on in Electrolux, promoting reliability culture and making sure that it takes traction inside the company. Okay, so the first question I would like to ask you, what is a good reliability culture for you?
Great way to start off. What I like in working with teams and engineering teams is that people are really open to work together, not as hierarchical as, in other words, not overly hierarchical, more of teammates where people are have respect for each other. I like to see that all ideas are considered. In other words, people have an idea that doesn't get shot down. One of the negative sides of culture is when people bring up an idea and people go, oh, we've tried that before. Yeah. That's not going to work. Negativity, whereas what I like to see is positivity, at least listening. And so someone brings up an idea and they go, that's interesting. Let's talk about it and explore it. That's the kind of culture I like to see. I like to see a culture where people are not afraid to talk to management. Mm-hmm. And that's a two-way street. Management should make it safe to communicate. Yeah. And people should have courage to speak up. So it's a kind of a two-way street. And so that culture that encourages open communication with management is really important. So those are a few things off the top of my head. How about yourself?
Yeah, so I agree with you. So basically, a good culture, you know, what you're describing is a good working culture where people can speak up, when people can are not afraid of saying what they think, and there is a culture that accepts failures. You know, this is the kind of positive culture in a company where people are focused on problem solving, instead of, as you said, hierarchical structure, is a positive environment. However, in terms of reliability, that might be a little bit more specific, you know, because I think it's positive when people are curious and people try to propose new concepts, new way. But you know, in some cases, reliability offers already a lot of tools, a lot of approaches that are well established, and they require a certain discipline. You know, FMEA is one, but also DRBFM, design review based on failure mode, is an approach of structuring design reviews, you know. And if you stick to this kind of processes, you may get some advantages. So I will say, yeah, I think it's important that people are positive, people are listening to you, and you can listen to the people and all what we said. But I think it's a good reliability environment is where also the reliability roots are in the company, you know, so people know what are the damage mechanisms, people know how to do a proper FMEA, people know what is the importance of reliability, you know, on design for reliability instead of just testing. You know, I think it's a combination on good attitude of people and strong matters, strong competence. This is I would say this is a good background for reliability.
It's a good balance.
Yeah,
it's a good balance. The on the one hand, you can go too far on openness and brainstorming and ideas where you don't get things done. In other words, you can't just keep generating ideas without some type of structure and goals, yeah, and time discipline and things like that. So that'd be the one end. And the other end of it is nothing is possible. Things don't get done here, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think the right answer is somewhere in the middle, where
yeah,
you listen to ideas. I love brainstorming, but there's a time when you have to stop brainstorming, and you have to evaluate, and you have to get to a solution and a course of action. And so knowing how to balance those things between openness and ideas versus targeting and who's going to do what by when, kind of thing, that balance is very, very important. The other thing I'll mention to you is I really encourage people to speak up when they have concerns. So now we're getting a little bit into what do you do. If it doesn't go well, that's the problem with management or the people that are listening to you. But the wrong thing to do is to anticipate or fear that it won't go well and then not speak up. Our job in reliability is to be very honest with project leadership and engineering as to what our opinions are. Because if you think something has a problem, that's not being negative. You have to be able to defend it. You have to be open, accurate, and then you have to communicate.
Yeah.
So I don't want to have wallflowers that just sit around and try not to offend people. I want to have people that speak up, even if they disagree. So that's a good culture, of course, accepts that and honors it and even encourages it. If you're not seeing that, now we get into what do you do? So what do you do if you see something's wrong? Maybe you think something might fail, or you think that a design solution isn't the right one, and you speak up and you get frowned upon, or people don't take it well, or, you know, what do you do as a engineer when you're in that environment that isn't positive the way you want it to be? What do you think there, Enrico? What would you do in that circumstance.
Yeah. So before touching this point, Carl, I wanted to mention a couple of experiences I had regarding what you said before. So basically, the biggest problem you can encounter as a reliability engineer in a company are the hidden ones. So the problems that are not communicated, and therefore reliability can help, with design reviews, for example. In the design review, transparency is really important, And I remember some years ago was like a plastic gear element that was full of voids, And there was a young engineer that cut for failure analysis, and for the first time, he saw a lot of voids in the gear. Say, huh, these voids. What should we do? How should we communicate that there are voids? Of course, you should communicate it. Of course, because from the voids, you can they might be some weak points of the gear, And we communicated it honestly, and we review it, and an activity started based on that, But there is the tendency, for some people to say, "Hey, let's keep it secret," and this is not the way how reliability should work, but basically also engineering.
Yeah, I totally agree. It does not work that well. It does not work that way at all, and. That's why we have to be, especially speaking to reliability people here, because many listeners are in reliability engineering or quality or interested in those subjects. It is critical that we speak honestly and accurately. And you can do that in a positive way.
Yeah, that's right.
You have to be honest. You have to have integrity. Speak the truth, and you can do that in a positive way. So that's the skill, and that skill can be learned.
Yeah.
That's one of my points, is in terms of what do you do if you're in a bad culture?
In addition to that, Carl, I would suggest to replace PowerPoints through real reports. Because in the reports, you have all the information that brought you to a certain decision. In a PowerPoint, you always can skip something. You can just present the nice side of the medal. Instead, if you are used to write reports, detailed reports, and managers are used to read them, that is incredibly powerful. Because first of all, you document all the information, all the activity you have done, and people can critically review what you have done. And ask questions. In the presentation, this is much harder. This is one suggestion I'm doing, because I see a lot of companies that where managers are not reading reports at all. That is important things, to my opinion. What do you think about it?
I agree. That having the ability, these are skills. And when Fred Schenkelberger and I co-authored our book on the process of reliability engineering, we included a couple of chapters at the end on it's the softer skills, the people skills. And one of them is on report writing, and presentation is another one. And report writing can be very powerful. If it's done well, you can be thoughtful and be positive. So I think that's very good. I have a couple of points to bring up. Now we're into what do you do? You're in a culture that is not where you'd like it to be.
Yeah.
Well, the thing, of course, you can control is yourself. And no matter what is happening, there's always a pathway of what can be done. And so when I'm communicating a problem, like I think this widget's going to fail, and here's the data that shows that, I always want to characterize it as what can be done.
Yeah.
I think if we work with the design teams, we can make some adjustments, et cetera. In other words, you always want to look for solutions not just bad news. And anybody, even a negative culture, will think well if you have well thought out solutions.
Yeah.
So I just want to urge that. The other thing I mentioned is if you have a criticism to make, I typically want to do that in person, one-on-one, rather than in front of a group. And so in other words, if you have something you need to say that you need to get off your chest, so to speak, I want to be sure I don't come across and embarrass someone in public. Because then it's not going to work at all. So if I have a critique or a criticism of someone, a colleague or whatever, I'll typically try to talk with them in a positive way, but one-on-one. And that way you can air it out and come to ideas. So those are a couple points about what do you do in an environment that's not where you'd like it to be.
Yeah. So that's definitely a good hint. I would say that I would add that if you work with the design reviews, basically you present your decision to an audience of people that can review and have time to discuss them. So I always encourage people to invite for design reviews, because at the end of the review you can decide whether you go in one direction or the other. It's not just the one single person responsibility. Yeah. So basically, I prefer when teams fail instead of just one person fail. You share responsibility, not because you don't want to take decision by yourself, but you can be as transparent as you can if you feel you are supported by the team. You know, you say, okay, we develop this component and we fail. Okay, there are the combination of causes that we forgot to consider that, or we didn't acknowledge that the damage mechanism might occur. Always shit happens, you know. But if the team is unite, you know, and people work together, it's much more effective than saying, hey, the design is your task. Yeah, that's completely different. I would say, regarding your point, regarding my opinion, one of the most dangerous situation reliability engineer can encounter is where companies are really relaxed and process driven. Basically, everything is work just to fulfill a process. So the design is there, and then the test is done just to check the box. Yeah? And that is really risky, because all the risks are hidden. They are intentionally hidden inside the procedure. The procedure are generally based on success run, and you test up to 100%, and then say, okay, I check the box. If something is going to fail, it's not who matters, is the procedure that decides how to move. Okay, so this is really, really risky, because you cannot address issues, you know, because you are forced to follow procedure. And this is, I think, is really frustrating for an engineer. Yeah, because, you know, you are working in an environment that is not encouraging innovation at all, but is encouraging you to stick to the procedure. In this case, you know, even the problems are not visible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because everything needs to work smoothly, you know. That's, for me, is really, really frustrating situation.
So then let's talk about what we do now on things like that. When I see a company that's focused more on filling out the forms and check boxes and just doing what they're supposed to do, as opposed to innovating and creating and coming up with good ideas. One thing I try to do is to get to know the people a little bit. Let's say you're talking with a manager that has that attitude. They're not a they're not a big picture person. They're just saying, okay, we're just going to get this done and get it out the door. Make sure we've filled out the forms, et cetera. So not a good attitude. I try to find out from that person, and I've done this in consulting work. I've done this in my different careers I've had. I try to find out from the person what problems they're running into. What is looking at things from their point of view. For instance, one person I had a consulting job that I ran into like that, the person was, when I talked to them privately or we got to know each other a little bit, was focused almost entirely on warranty because that's how he got measured. Yeah. And that's where the black eyes came from. That's where the problems came from his management is, oh my God, this problems in warranty, it's costing us too much money. So when I look at things like that and understand that's what motivates him, then I can characterize what we can do because I like to focus on prevention. But I can at least be aware of what lens that person is looking through. They're in that mode. There's no advanced way to know. In other words, you don't know what's going on in someone's mind. But if you can look at what problems they're trying to solve and help them solve those problems, then they're going to be more interested in listening to you about other things.
Okay, that's definitely a great lesson, I think, you know, to put yourself in the perspective of people that are really working on the particular company. It might be, I'm not saying is easy, no, because it might be that people are working for the same company for a long time, and then they are so they just want to avoid troubles, these kind of things. This we know, everybody knows, but I think to, you know, you instead of highlighting the distance between your approach and his or her approach, you are trying to find what are the common points and try to put in the perspective to see from the job from a different perspective. You know, that's it's incredible. After so long time, you have experienced a lot of this situation, I imagine, and you still conserve this kind of approach. That's quite enlightening. That's definitely because even as consultant, you might get frustrated when you find always the same situation, you know. But it doesn't seem to be the case for you, Carl, isn't it?
Yes. The other thing I'll mention is everyone comes to work with some purpose. Some of them, like you say, they've been doing this a long time and maybe they just can't wait to retire or whatever, but there's something that motivates them. And if you can find what that is, like one of the common things that brings people to work is having products succeed, having happy customers. And so if you can keep reminding people on how what you think needs to be done, like reliability, impacts what they are trying to do and see that clearly and traceable, that's going to help a lot. And so if management's concerned about budget, well, then you need to be aware of that.
And
sometimes the culture is they're too concerned about budget, or they're too concerned about headcount, or they're too concerned about whatever. But you at least need to be aware of what concerns they have and try to help them solve those concerns with customer in mind, with your tools in mind, that type of thing. And if you can get people in some way inspired that the reliability methods can help them achieve what they're trying to achieve, and then that's a good thing. I think culture can be changed, but it's not easy. Yeah. And it takes quite a bit of work. One other point I'll mention where I've been successful in helping to change a culture is to find success, to get successes.
Yeah.
And it sounds a little trite, but what I mean by that is don't get some projects where you can actually show that the methods you're working on work and get successes with it, because then it builds on it. Then you communicate the successes and it builds, you get some momentum, that type of thing. So I say, pick your projects carefully and get ones that have visibility and ones that make a difference and work very hard. I also say to when I'm mentoring engineers is don't be afraid to do extra time on study, self-study, like preparing for a meeting, preparing for a particular session with management or whoever it is. I often have to do preparation on my own, where I study up, learn more about what the projects are, what interests people, that type of thing. Helps move away, helps to get your voice heard. So those are some things off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, I think it was a great great lesson. I mean, you know, you are not just as consultant, you're not just teaching reliability, but you are also teaching how to listen to stakeholder or to listen to people, basically. So these psychological aspects of reliability engineer, I would like to have a separate SOR on that, Carl, because as I said, with your huge experience, you can teach a lot to me and also to all the listener to agenda reliability. So I also want to ask to the listener, if they have faced this kind of situation, so where the reliability culture is not so advanced, so how do you react? What solution, do you have a success story, or have you failed trying to change the culture, reliability culture in a company? This is also really interesting to know. Yeah, so you can reach out to reliability.com, to agendareliability.com, and you can also get in contact with me and Carl and the other hosts. Thank you very much, Carl, for this inspiring discussion.
Yeah, I really appreciate the discussion. It's such a hot topic. So very good. And thank you as well.
Yeah. See you around. Bye.
See you around. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.